Thank you very much for the introductory remarks. First of all, thank you very much mainly to Anka for the invitation and for the nice hospitality. It is good, as always, to be in Paris. Then second, I will talk in English since most of the papers read aloud here were in English. I will focus this contribution to some main points and try to put it into the discussion we had until now. The first point is the following. The Gothic invasions of the region, Crimea, Maeotis, and so on, in the 3rd century changed the Roman or later Byzantine rule in the region deeply. This old system, which was so exceptional in the ancient world, a kind of Doppelmonarchy, the nomads in the same kingdom, the Regnum Bosporanum, like the old or very old Greek colonies. Then Kherson more or less directly incorporated in this. This changed. This all broke down, but this does not mean that the Greek element there broke down. It's about Roman-Byzantine administration incorporation into the provincial system. This broke down in the 3rd century. Though we have the victory of King Tiranes, and we have an inscription already cited, by the way, the excellent book of Guy Dukevich, a German version of 1971. We have an inscription of the time of Diocletian, but in the middle of the 4th century, the emission of coins stops. And then we have this passage in the book, in the 30s book of Ammian. And imagine this, after a century of strong symmachia between the Regnum Bosporanum, there come some emissaries to Emperor Julian from very remote people, and you know, the extra Tigrinis and so on, from the other side of the Tigris. You know, very remote people, never heard about, and among them are also the inhabitants of Bosporus. Bosporus is the old capital. The name appears first in Demosthenes, Bosporus instead of Panticapaion, then in Plinius, and they search for Roman allegiance. So you, in historian, the 4th century wants us to believe that there was no old relationship between Panticapaion and the Roman Empire. And then you learn the reason why, because so Rome cannot help these people anymore. This is like the evidence looks, except of Kherson, Khersonesos, which was probably kept as a kind of Roman Byzantine stronghold of the fleet, apropot. Probably it is not so clear in which relationship the Goths stand to the Byzantine Empire, maybe as a kind of federati, but what was the administrative historical reality behind this federati is difficult to assess. And in the 70s, probably 374, which is in one of the last chapters in Ammian, the Huns come and they make the last king of the Goths, Hermanaric, so the Goths before their separation, Hermanaric, probably to commit suicide, if the passage is interpreted very well. And then we have an almost total gap. We don't know except probably of Kherson, how Byzantine rule in the 5th century on the region looked like. Probably there was not very much. And then this is again an old idea by Gaide Dukevich. Byzantium with Justinian, when he was probably heir apparent. So, after the taking of power by his uncle Justinus in 518, Justinian develops an idea of more or less direct rule in this area. So this is a new beginning. This has nothing to do with the Greek element there, or if amphora look Greek or whatsoever. But this is about the incorporation of the direct rule, including, for example, taxes of a region into the Byzantine Empire. Now, this to a certain, this to pick up the discussion of this morning, the datation of Pseudo-Arianus. I think it is on page 112, maybe even on 111, in the annotations, and I think annotation 27 to 29 in Diller's book. There he writes about the datation of Pseudo-Arian. And he sees, of course, in the foregoing pages, he has a lengthy passage about the six cases where the specialities of the Pseudo-Arian, so what we would call in German his Eigengut, his proper material. No, if you have a text which you cannot date, and there are several layers of textual history, you take the youngest one, which you can identify to say, this was the final reaction, this was something like the author, or the author, whatsoever. And he sees that the closest connection is with the Jordanes Cassiodor, and the 8th book of Procopius. 8th book of Procopius means 50s, probably 555, Constantinople. And then he proceeds, yeah, but there are some indications why I would date the Pseudo-Arian even later, to the end of the 6th century. And here he uses an argumentation which does not seem very convincingly, because he says that this region does not appear in Hierocles Synecdemos. And he dates Hierocles Synecdemos to the second half of the 6th century, and this is wrong. Hierocles is dated to before 535 or 537. And the context of argumentation in Diller is Hierocles is an ecclesiastical handbook. This is about archbishoprics, metropolis, and so on. This is wrong again. Hierocles is an administrative handbook. And one of our colleagues, I think Professor Godard, said this quite well this morning. This is like the Notitia Dignitatum, which lived many redactions. So, the only thing we can know that before 535 or 537, this region was not considered as a part of the administrative system of the Byzantine Empire. Then Diller proceeds again with ecclesiastical history. And he says, yeah, there are two bishoprics which are not mentioned. And the one is Nicopsis, and the other one is Daphnusia. Daphnusia is on the southern shore of the Black Sea. And if you look to Byzantine Notitiae Episcopatum, you have several possibilities. And you have quite an old list of Byzantine bishoprics, which is called after Gelzer, the Urklesis, so the primordial klesis, klesis from Greek kaleo, the Urklesis, the primordial list of bishoprics. And this was finished in the time of Justinian. And there, Chersonesos and Pantikapaion appear as autonomous bishoprics. You can read this in Beck, Kirche und theologische Literatur of 1959. Autonomous bishoprics means there was no superior metropolitan in the system of the Byzantine Church over this region. They be dependent directly from Constantinople. Normally, this was the case when there was no direct Byzantine rule. But this is again the Urklesis. And Daphnusia and Nicopsis appear in later lists, the one in Pseudo-Epiphanius, which is 7th century, and the one other one in the Diatypusis in of the time of Leo the VI. So I cannot see from this elevation of these cities to bishoprics, I cannot see a help for the datation of Pseudo-Arian, as Diller thought. Next point. Again, picking up the discussion we had before. One problem in dealing with Byzantine literature is generally we have a selection, a very poor selection, done in late Byzantine times. What was saved when the Ottomans came was all ancient literature, all the literature from the organization which survived the state. This is the Byzantine Church. But we have few, for example, De Administrando Imperio is more or less preserved in one manuscript, the manuscript in Leipzig. We have very few evidence from the statal administration. This is a hard point for every Byzantinist. Now, if you deal, for example, with medieval history here, you have so much evidence, in documentary evidence, say from the Merovingians, Urkunden, charters, a lot. In Byzantium, most of this has been destroyed or is lost. We have charters, of course, but normally those kept in the monasteries, and there are very few, for example, direct documents preserved in the original before the 11th century. This is when this sets in. So this, if you read for example, Quintus Smyrnaeus, then you can say, okay, Byzantines were not so interested in the reality, or Eustathius of Thessaloniki, they were not so interested in the reality behind the text, but these are texts selected for the literary merit. When we have texts, and there's one example, for example, which is would be important for our region here, is De Administrando Imperio. This is from Constantine the VII, Porphyrogenitus, and there is chapter, I think, 13 to 42. There is a lengthy passage on the region, the western shore of the Black Sea. And this is written like Arian's pseudo-Arian Spiritus in the popular Greek. And it shows a heavy interest in people's names. And for example, it gives names of locations in many languages. And this is clearly why. This is very far from ancient geography, it's not episteme. It is also far from literary stylistics, it's simply for the statal administration what to do with these people, for example, in the years of the Russian-Byzantine War in the 10th century. And for example, from De Administrando Imperio, we have the names of all the rivers, Dnieper, Dniester, and so on, in both languages, Scandinavian, so Old Swedish, and Old Russian, or Old East Slavonic, whatsoever. It is not for literary purposes, because the imperial administration had to know how to run, for example, say, a military expedition in the region. Next and last point, when when the Byzantines try to regain this zone, this whole region, the northern part of the Pontus Euxinus, things had changed in another direction too. After the breaking down of the Regnum Bosporanum, not only the military and ethnical composition of the area had changed a lot. We know Huns were living there. We know Goths were living there. Procopius describes the Goths in the third book quite peacefully living, and tries to make his Byzantine readers to believe that they were so loyal to the Byzantine government that they did not emigrate with Theodoric to Italy. This is funny because the Goths were established in the region in the 3rd, 4th century and have nothing to do with Theodoric. Theodoric came from Pannonia, and it looks like as if Procopius wants us to forget some things, or he plays over them. But the institution which changed the whole mechanism of domination in the region was the Byzantine Church. And we have a letter, one of the letters to Olympias, his friend, by Archbishop Ioannis Chrysostomos, which is dated when he was in exile in Armenia. And he says, I have a bishop. No, he was Patriarch of Constantinople, but because he was on the so-called wrong side during the Gothic, I don't remember who said this tomorrow, that of course there were a lot of Goths in Koran. Again, Professor Godoy, a lot of Goths in Constantinople. We know also from the Book of Ceremonies that there was a Gothic Christmas play staged regularly in Constantinople for Christmas, however this looked. John Chrysostomos was exiled from Constantinople to a very remote region in the times of Arcadius. And he's anxious what to do with Bosporus, with Pantikapaion, because he wants there a bishop to be elected. And he's afraid that the Goths there could choose their own bishop. And the old bishop was dead, and John Chrysostom mentions him. He gives his name, and his name is Unilas, so he was a Goth, and it's quite probable that the Gothic bishop among the Goths on Crimea was preaching in Gothic. So the only institution which during all these times has a kind of grip on this region is the Orthodox Church. And this is important to keep in mind, because we have an episode, for example, that Emperor Justinian has a Gothic prince from Crimea. The episode is transmitted in Malalas, who was a contemporary, and Theophanes, who died in 817. The name differs, they have Grod or Gordas anyway, and he is converted to Christianity, but not in the Crimea or in the Caucasus. He's a Sabir Hun, but he's converted in Constantinople herself by the emperor. The emperor is the godfather. And of course, Justinian does not do this only to spread Christianity or Christianity as he saw it. He used the Christian church for expanding Byzantine rule in this area. And this, of course, ends in the end in the Korsunskaya legenda and in the Povest Vremennih Let, because we know that Constantine Cyril was debating with Khazars on the Crimea. But the Huns in the time of Justinian, this is the early time of Justinian, probably the 20s, the Huns resist against Gordas. He begins, as a good Christian, to destroy the golden idols, and the Huns kill him and make his brother, whose name differs in the sources, make him king. And the reaction on the long run of Justinian is We have even the name of the Byzantine general, Petros. Justinian sends troops. So the final idea would be in the second half of the 6th century, apart from the episode when the Turks come and destroy a part of this, there was a kind of stable Byzantine regime there until the Khazars came. So it looks more likely that the pseudo-Arian was finally reducted in the time of Justinian. This is a kind of master plan to orientate the future Byzantine administration about the ethnic composition of the region. Thank you very much.